Welcome. My name is Mały Dwulat from Poland, from ProM Ministries. And it will be a little bit challenging for you next hour because of the English language has a different versions. You know, you go to England, there is an English, right? You are in America, it's American English, right? You go to Poland, there is a, we call it Pinglish, you know, so. It is challenging for me to speak English, but I do my best, and if you have any questions, you will say, hey, I don't understand, hey, I would like to know more, please tell us more what you meant by saying what you're saying. You're more than welcome. Please don't hesitate. Actually, it will help me to come across with something what I'm going to share. So it's good to be here at this conference. We're here with my wife for the first time in a gathering among the doctors, nurses, hospital workers, medical. Although, you know, in our age, we spend some time in the with the doctor's office. But thanks God. He's good to us, and we are so glad to be here. Half of my life, I just give you a little bit background of the ProM for two reasons. One, to understand, to tune to Polish version of the English language, and the second reason is to get to know me a little bit, you know, and who we are and what we are doing before we'll talk about our main topic, which is the Ukraine and refugees and helping to the Ukrainians. You can, of course, you know, I was born and raised in Poland, which was a communist country at that time. So language that was required by us at that time was Russian. We have been taught Russian for many years, so Polish and Russian. And then when we regained freedom, there was easier to take English and other languages as well. I have this privilege being raised even growing in the communist country. But I was raised in the Christian home. My parents and my grandparents were born again believers. That's a make a big, big difference in the life. Those of you who have the same story, life stories, I see some heads going this way. You agree with me. And I believe in a generational blessing. Isn't it was God who said, you know, I will bless you to the 1,000 generations. And my grandparents got saved before the Great War, 1914. Can you imagine that? You know, this was so, for me, it is like, really, Grandma? That was that? You know, and you were young? Really? You know, so, yes, in 1914, they preached the gospel like they did during the medieval ages, and like they do right now. There was a crusade. A traveling preacher came to the village where my grandparents lived, not by car, but that's a bicycle. That was the only vehicle available at that time for the missionaries and for many. And then my grandparents got saved. And God has saved their life through the First World War, the Second World War. And then my parents were born in 20s, and then I was born in 50s, and half of my life spent in the communist country, 1989. At that time, when I was growing in a tiny evangelical church, Poland is, historically speaking, is a Catholic country. Over 90% of the people are claimed to be Catholic. Evangelicals make up maybe 40,000 altogether in the country, even now. So it's a 0.1%, 40 million people in the country, 40,000 evangelical believers. Small, but along with the long history of the Christianity because of the Catholicism. We were a tiny 30 people church. When I grew up, and when I was 10 years old, my mom died with a stroke. And that was just like many of us when we were facing situation like that, we were saying, why bad things happen to the good people? And it just happened to us. It was not easy at that time to think how comes we do what we do, if something like that happened. But praise God, you know, He saved me from any other bad things in the life. When I was 18, I took a decision for the Lord and dedicated my life to Him and went to the seminary and became the youth pastor in Warsaw Church, even during this old time. And back to the 90s, fast forward, and Poland turned from communist to democracy. So from the approach to not possible to do the things, you know, when we were told by our parents, no, it is not possible, son, for you to do it because, you know, we live in this country. And we change from this situation to the possible. Everything is possible for God. And of course, it was possible under the communist time. But in 1990, for 10 years, I was a youth pastor in the church. And then opportunity came and we registered 501c3 as a non-for-profit organization. We were second non-for-profit organization in the country, a Christian one called Pro-M. Starting with the camps, and the camp were playing a very important role in our life. First camp in 1990, what we put out was 150 participants at this camp, and we've seen 60 decisions for the Lord. Isn't it great? That was so wonderful. We're so encouraged to do more and more and more. And the last summer, this is already 33 years of our ministry, but the last summer, we did have over 2,200 campers and 700 decisions for the Lord. So God is good, and the country is open for doing the evangelism, and there is not a big revival like we would like to expect, but their gospel is preached. And we, 23 years ago, we just we were able to get the nice camp and conference center. And the campers, 10 weeks of the camping, past summer, it was a 700 from Poland, but we did have a 300 campers from Ukraine. And we've done the camp in Zimbabwe as well as a ministry. So I won't go to any other details about the other camps, but Ukrainians. Right now we're just switching our gears and going to the our involvement with the Ukrainian refugees. February 24th, when war broke up, I was in Dominican Republic with our 10 key leaders, guys, for the conference about the church planting and city outreach, etc. So in Wednesday, we landed in Dominican Republic just with the anticipation of having a great time with the hundreds of the people who came there for this conference with the Go Ministries. And Thursday, war broke up. Friday, 10 of us were back to the plane and flying to Poland just to be with our ministry, because it was not like even the doubt in our minds that there is a, we will enjoy the conference and the war is there, and our wives, ladies, and Eva, my wife, is here. Ladies stayed there and doing good job. They probably would do better job without us, you know. But we don't want it to be kind of the separated from these things. So when we arrived on Saturday, our camp was already full of the refugees. Because of our connections before, and some workers of Pro-M are Ukrainians, they were coming. They were just coming, like, giving us a call, we're on the way, of course, come over. So 200 like that, next day, all but they were already occupied. And when we returned from this Dominican trip, we just seen a full house at the camp. You know, we were connected with Ukrainian churches because before we've done some of the activities together. Camp, conferences, Journey to Bethlehem, Road to Jerusalem, some of this place, and we helped to do it, to do for them. And there was a natural connection. Nine workers of Pro-M at that time was Ukrainians. They're still with us. So there was a natural thing for us to be connected with the churches and groups of the different, and individuals as well. When I returned this day to see the couple days later, I see Bogdan. Bogdan is a Ukrainian. He worked with us. He is married to the Polish girl. Actually, his wife is a doctor. He's just about to graduate from medical school, and both of them supposed to be here, but they didn't get a visa because he is Ukrainian. That was kind of hard on us to take it. We apply again. Twice refused to be given a visa, so otherwise they would be here sharing with you, talking about their experience and involvement with Ukrainian. But Bogdan, tall, skinny guy, you know, taller than me. I was skinny once upon the time as well. Bogdan, I look at Bogdan. I said, Bogdan, you look kind of tired. Bogdan said, yes, I am. I'm driving to the border to pick up the Ukrainians and bring them to our camp and property. And our camp property is a 5 hours drive from the Ukrainian borders, one way. Waiting on the border for them to cross the border and to connect with us, it usually took a good few hours. Beginning of the war, first 2-3 weeks, there was 150,000 Ukrainians crossing the border with Poland daily. Daily. Up to now, the data is saying there's more than 5, maybe 6 million people cross the border, Polish-Ukrainian border, and end up in the different places. But there's so many. But a little bit less than 2 million stay in Poland for the period of time which will be needed. So Bogdan said, I'm driving to the border to bring them. I said, how many times did you go to the border? There will be a fifth one, he said. But it was 100 hours from the beginning of war. 100 hours, so it's less than 5 days, 4 days. 5 hours one way, waiting on the border, 5 hours back. Bogdan was pale in his face because of the tiredness. And I look at him, I said, Bogdan, you don't going anymore to the border because you can hurt yourself. And he said, he looked at my eyes. He said, Maui, how couldn't I? My friend is waiting there on the border for me to be picked up. My aunt, my church, my people are there. And I said, yeah, I understand that, but you know what? Yeah, I will lock you up from outside, you know, when you return from this trip, and just for you to have at least 6 hours good sleep and the rest. That was a story of the beginning. Pastor from Kherson, Oleg, and 14 people with him. They start driving just the next day when war broke up with 3 cars, you know, 5 seats in every car. On the way to Poland, one of their cars went broke. So when I saw 14 people and 2 cars pulled into our parking lot, and I know Oleg from our connections before, because they were coming for our conferences, pastoral meetings, etc. I said, Oleg, how can you manage, you know, with 2 cars and 14 people? Well, I said, one car was broken, we just push it side of the road, we just packed all the people to the 2 cars, and we make it, and we are here. And so that was so, you know, many people were just coming in by the cars, by trains, waiting hours to cross the border, just to be in the safe place. So in our camp, we provide for them food and shelter, of course, you know, in good conditions, and at the same time connections with the other cities, our churches, other churches in Poland, same time in the different countries, you know, like Germany, Holland, Switzerland, helping them to relocate sooner than later, because it would be better to go first. You didn't know how long war would last. People at our camp, they said, well, no, we're not going. So what do you mean? No, we wait here to the end of the war, because war will be over soon. They believe it will be like that. But, you know, when you were in March, they believe it. When in April, you less believe it. You know, May, you know, and we were already, what, a year and a half. And doesn't look good. So we were helping people to relocate to the different places. So first of all, bringing them to our property. And we're speaking up the people from bus station. One time, I went to the bus station in Warsaw. And there was two young guys, 22 years old, twins. Looks different, but twins. And I said, how comes they let you out from the country since you're in this age? You're allowed, you know, at the beginning of the war, when there were three kids, fathers were allowed to go with these three kids to other countries. But then they changed the rule, and nothing like that anymore. But two guys, 22, and he said, well, you know, they let me out and my twin brother to take care of me because I was wounded, shot, you know, with his Soviet Russian soldiers. Tell me the story, please. And he started telling the story. I was in the car. There was a five of us in the private car, driver, my mom, two friends on the sides, and I was in the middle in the back seat. And they stop us, and the Russians, they just, for no reasons, machine gun, all of them killed right there in the spot, except this guy, this young guy. I said, how comes you survive? He said, I was holding a dog on my chest, like that. And then when bullet came, just drive through the skull of the dog and end up in my arm, and it's still here, he said. I said, no, I don't believe. Another one just hit my side of my head, and I was bleeding, and every one of us looked like we were all dead. So when the soldiers look inside, they said, they don't alive, you know, and they took off. And Bogdan, when he came back, another Bogdan, but they had this guy who come back to the senses after these things, he walked out, he took his mom to the ditch side of the road, and he buried her covered with the dirt, to protect from the animals, and, you know, and I mean, when you hear the story, it's hard to listen the story like that. Can you imagine to live through the story like that? He said that there was a dentist, a nurse, tried to help him with the taking off the bullet, you know, so, and she was having some part of this whatever, part of the ammunition in his body here and there. So she gave him Novocaine, like, you know, for for the numbness, and she just cut it off and helped him to take it out, you know. And they came to Poland, and they were with us for this first 3 months. Another story, you know, when the Mariupol, the city of Mariupol, we heard a lot and watched a lot, you know, this city which suffered a lot, almost not existing. Many people were hiding in the bunker, you know, like a shelter, for the days there. One day, I see the lady, Brahma, my age, her daughter, and a granddaughter sitting in our dining among other people, and I just next to them. And I said, oh, hello, how are you? Now, where are you from? And she said, I'm from Mariupol. Oh, so how comes you managed to be here? She said, I was one of those first given this corridor, you know, 2 hours. Remember, there was a time when the Russians, they gave like 2 hours for people to get out from this situation. And I was with this group, with my daughter and a granddaughter. And then I said, how it was in this life, in this bunker? And then I realized how stupid I am to ask the question like that, how it was in the bunker. And I said, I'm sorry, you know, I'm asking this question. And she said, no, that's fine. I can tell you. Little babies, like 6 months, 12 months years old, were dying on my hands because of the dehydration. There was no water, no food. 12 years old girl survived, but a few months baby without a story, you know, the story like that is just, you know, it's hard to talk about that, but can you imagine what it means, how to live through that? And this lady, you know, I said, where would you like to go to wait for the war will be over? She said, I don't know. You tell us. I said, okay, who you are to tell you where to go? And they said, well, you know what? My husband is far away. And I have nobody to ask, you know, for advice. And, you know, you go farther east, the culture is different. The role of the men, husbands are different than in the Western world. So we were sitting and thinking and praying. And, well, she ended up in Switzerland. There was a possibility of going there, you know, and she's right now there. There's another, story after stories. You know, we have sent dozen trucks, vans for people to help them to escape the war zone. Because, you know, the beginning of the war, it was so hard, there was no transportation. And, you know, when war it is in place, it's time to make money on people. You know, so one couple, you know, three kids, mom and dad, he said, we have to pay $100 a person to drive us 300 miles away from the war zone. Well, we said, okay, we need to help somehow. Can you help with the transportation? So we just call our friends, supporters like you and others, and we raise money and we sent 12 minivans, 9-seaters to Ukrainian to help them and just to help them to escape. You know, first day of the war, our camp became the warehouse for clothes, for food. Of course, we have people, over 1,000 of them during the first 3 months coming and going to the different countries. And when there was a day, we say on the social media, we got a call from Ukraine who said, okay, we need a baby formula and the diapers. So we just put this on the internet right away in the morning, you know, and the evening time cars were lining up to our camp with the baby formula and diapers. So, and we just unload this and load up the semis and we're sending to Ukraine just as a help. And at the same time, you know, helping those who are coming our way. Of course, if you have some questions, you know, feel free to ask, because I'm just a kind of the storyteller. I don't give you any the wise advices what to do with the counseling program or do what we're doing. Then I'll talk shortly about that. But first of all, you know, to paint you a picture which you're familiar with, but the picture of the first 3 months there. In the war, and it was a family, foster family, 10 people, father, mom, 2 old children, and 6 foster kids. They came to us from Kherson, and they said, we would like to go to Canada. Do you have a connections? No, we don't. Okay, we'll try to find the connections for you in Canada, to go there. Well, a few days later, after they came, there was a German, three German guys with three cars came with the food and help to Ukrainians. One of the guys was a mayor of the little town not far from Augsburg, you know, when the Luther started his things, you know, 1517. And he said, I'm from suburbs of Augsburg, you know, I'm a mayor of this town, and we would like to help somehow. And I said, do you have a housing for somebody? And he said, no, but we have a house which is not used. Maybe we can renovate this house and we can, you know, host a family there. Okay. I said, when will we be ready? Well, he said, give me 3-4 weeks the most. Well, he's calling me in 3 weeks. He said, house is ready. Do you have somebody to send our way? I said, sure, I do have. How many people can you accommodate in this house? He said, no more than 10. Husband, wife, and 10 foster, eight kids, which were looking for the place in Canada, right? He just told you. And then they said, I talked to him, Vlad, would you like to go to Germany instead? He said, well, maybe yes, because we are somehow connected with Germany. I said, what do you mean? He said, my grandfather was a slave during the wartime in Germany. He was taken during the wartime as a labor power. And then when war was over, he returned back to Ukraine. So we were connected. Well, such a nice connection, right? but he really, you know, and he ended up there, you know, and before their departure, you know, next day we said, okay, tomorrow we'll load two cars, we'll drive you there. The day before he came to me, and those children, they painted this picture. And this picture for me is millions, means word of millions. You know, you see everything on this picture, what they lived through, the trauma, the dreams and suffering of those people. You see the missiles there going from the skies. You see it in an umbrella with a Polish flag, protection kind of, Praem, our name there. Children, you know, like 17 through 6 years old, they just did it for us and gave it to me. You see mom, 3 kids. You see the mom, 3 kids, and father is missing because he is in the war. You see the aeroplane? Dream and desire to run far away somewhere from this situation. And you see a part of our camp property, beautiful river, because our camp property is forest, pine forest, river, green and nice. But you see the crying face of the girl who is missing home, uncertain of the future, just thinking, what's the next? What is the next? And you see the verse, Bible verse, you know, from Numbers 6, 24, 26. I will bless you and protect you. I will make my face shine on you and be gracious to you. I will lift up my face to you and grant you a peace. To quote the verse like that, in the situation like that, normally we would say, God help us. But they're still having a peace in heart because of God and what. So, a few days later, they're calling us. Hey, Maui, we are here. They took us to the shop. We bought the new beds. We bought the food. And they give us a car. And our kids, Monday, will start school in Germany. In German? Vlad said, yeah, we don't speak German. That's okay. They will go to school and they will learn fast. And they are there. They're already there. And just, as a family, they're living there. And we connect time to time. They're calling us. And we say, you know, how they are doing. So for us, you know, this is so encouraging to hear. And there's stories after story, story after story like that. And then time came when our camps were just at hand. You know, I told you we're big in camping ministry. We do school, we do church planting, we do camps in the different countries, Zimbabwe, Israel, and some other places. But the registration of the camp was March 15, a couple days, all places, 2,000 kind of sold out. Well, April came, we were just thinking and praying, what will we do? God help us to do what this? You cannot do camp together. There is no way because it's... And then in the city, there was a hotel for sale. So we approached the owner of the hotel and said, sir, we'd like to rent this hotel from you. We don't have money to buy it, and we need to relocate the Ukrainians. And it was a functioning hotel, and the owner said, no. Can rent it for you, you know, because I don't want to later on, you know, do everything, you know, like fixing up. We will do it on our cost, he said. If you have money, I can sell you this hotel. But there is no other option. Well, we don't have money, but we know somebody who owns everything, right? You know. and Father in heaven, and then we just pray and we say, what should we do? Why not tell you? We have this camp property, beautiful, nice one. We're raising funds 10 years to buy this property and operate the camp and conference center. And then, 4 years for school, we have preschool and mentoring high school, over 500 students. And I was making this short video. We do like once every 2 weeks, like an As It Happens video from Poland about what we're doing. So I was standing next in front of this hotel and sharing our supporters. Say, guys, we don't need this money for ourselves. We need to buy the place for Ukrainians for the rest of the time of the war. It took us 8 weeks to raise enough money to buy the hotel. So God is really making doing miracles like He was doing, and like He is doing in your life, in our life. So May, end of May, I called the owner of the hotel and said, "Sir, we have money in place." So good, come over, I'll sell you. Like I said, you know. So end of May, we sign up the contract for the to buy this hotel. And so we met with our Ukrainians at camp, and we said, okay, last May is the last day of you here at the camp, and tomorrow will be your exodus from the camp. In the morning, we'll go to this place, the different place for you. So I said, you are like Israelites, you know, it was not... You know, just if you need something, just grab whatever you need from the camp, rob the camp, you know, take whatever you need, because next day you'll be relocating to the hotel. So, in the morning, breakfast in our campsite, camp property, load up the cars, just 20 minutes away from the campsite, there's this hotel. So, and there is one bedrooms, everything is functioning. So, lunch was already there in this hotel. So I'll show you the short video, you know, how the one day of the life of Ukrainians looks like right now in this hotel. First 3 months, they were with us at the campsite, camp property, over 1,000 of them. Right now in this hotel, the life looks like that.
My name is Sergei Kavinsky, and here's my wife, Ira.
Меня зовут Олег.
Меня зовут Вадим. Моя дружина Ирина. Це наші діти.
Мене звати Тетяна.
Мене звати Віталій.
Мусили виїхати з України, тому що як почалася війна, ракети прилітали в різні міста, і в наше місто. У мене склалася досить важка ситуація. Мою маму вбили російські солдати, брата також розстріляли.
Подзвонили і сказали, ви мусите виїхати, тому що вам буде вашій сім'ї дуже велике горе. Вони заарестовують, у них битки там проводять.
I start a day early, and before breakfast I try to catch a couple hours to work. Then we have breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
завтрака обычно некоторые люди на работу идут, а некоторым людям приходится помогать, кого-то нужно отвезти, готовить какие-то документы, или в больницу надо поехать, или же в банк.
Я зі своєї сторони намагаюся допомогти людям, оскільки трошки володію польською мовою, допомогти з оформленням документів, там волось відвозити, наприклад, документи для навчання дітям, хто потребує цього таким чином.
До нас приїжджали американці, які з нами працювали психологічно, вони нам дуже допомагали. Ми розказували свої проблеми, вони з нами ділилися, вони нас піддержували. Волонтери біля нього ходили, допомагали, щоб мене чуть-чуть розгрузили, допомагали його водити. На візочку катали, я навіть його не катала, щоб мені було дуже роздихнути, щоб я трошечки могла розслабитися.
А обід у нас із часу до двох. От після обіду у нас теж якісь, в общем, дела у людей.
After lunch we try to do some work once in a while. We try to pitch the working hours to do some online translation.
Вечером у нас 6 часов ужин. После ужина я готовлюсь к библейской группе. И где-то полтора часа мы проводим здесь чтение Библии, общение библейское. И, конечно же, мы молимся. Молимся за Украину, чтобы поскорее война прекратилась. И также мы благодарим за польский народ, который открыли свои сердца, свои двери своих домов и помогает нам быть и как жить дальше.
Так, мы дуже вдячні за те, що люди турбуються про нас, про людей з України, і ми дуже вдячні за те, що маємо можливість де бути в безпечному місці.
Все дуже мені тут добре, я тут знаходжуся як в раю, я вам скажу, що дуже гарно, це місце рай. Проєм і Томашова готель, це місце рай, тому що тут дуже, все для нас, розумієте, все для нас, для моєї дитини, умови, все, дуже вдячна, низький вам уклін усім, дуже кланяюсь усім польським, друзям американським, всьому Євросоюзу, всім польському народу, дуже добрі люди, дякую велике.
Tanya is a mama to Serioja, the guy with this on the wheelchair. You've seen her, and she's there from the beginning of the war. No place to go. Poland doesn't provide such a care, you know, like maybe here in the States. I don't know, but they are there. They're there with us, and what future holds for them, we don't know. We help him to go to hospital. He was having a couple surgeries already to help to ease, you know, in his life. And Tanya. Tanya is, you've seen Tanya, just think, like I said, Tanya, just don't do that, you know, but this is a cultural for them to appreciate, you know, to show the appreciation, and of course, this is to God first, but then to you and others, other people who are praying for them and caring for them. And you've heard Oleg, you know, he's a pastor from Kherson. With these two cars, and that, you know, 14 and other people from his church. Oleg was doing every day, 7 o'clock p.m., the Bible hour for them, which is very important spiritual well-being. And of course, we didn't take only Christians to our refugees place. We take whoever was in the need. And they could come for this Bible hour and have a prayer and a time together. But Oleg came to me the other day, month ago, he said, Maui, I feel like I'm supposed to go back to Kherson, to my people, to the church where I was pastoring to, and this is a time to return, and he did. He returned with his wife, but his youngest daughter, 15 years old, he gave us a power of attorney to take care of this girl who is in our school, and in this place as well with the other Ukrainians. So the spiritual well-being is important for us. You know, they come to the church, they are part of the church, and some special programs for them. But we provide the counseling as well for their you know, the sessions on the with the professionals. We run something what we call a family counseling center at Pro-Am. We have certified counselors, not having a doctors in the sense of the general practitioners, but the counselors who are Christians. So they sit down with them and spending the hours to first to help them to open up. Because nobody is so right away, you know, ready to share their stories and to share what's going on in their hearts. But if you sit down with them one day, the next day, and the next day, they really open up and share their emotion, their feelings, and what they are going through. So we did have some counselors coming from the States as well. I've been asked if there'd be any of help, English, Ukrainian, Polish. It's a language, yes, it's a barrier. But you know, if you sit next to somebody who is in need, with a loving heart, the barrier of the understanding the language can be overcome easy, even with the translation. So if you would say, hey, can we come to your place and serve with you? I'm glad you asked, you know, anytime, just come over and help, because the help is still needed. And for these people who suffering, you know, cancer, there was an elderly person who came and passed away, died, you know, because of the sickness. Another mom came in being pregnant. A new baby was born in such a nice situation. Another mom came with a baby like, what was, honey, 3 weeks old?
2 weeks.
2 weeks old. She said, how did you manage to travel 20 hours with this little baby? We made it, we did it. But then a couple days later, the baby ended up in the hospital because of some of the problem. Baby's fine, mom is fine, but I'm just telling you that this is a situation like that. Some people need the spiritual help, prayer, and to talk with them and be with them. Some people just need to sit down with them. Many people need to help them to get the job. Kids of these families who are with us in a hotel, they are in our school. We've got a school, so which is a great thing to have, and they don't pay. They don't pay for, because they don't, simply saying, they don't have enough funds to do it. Beginning of war, they came with the savings, life saving in the pocket. Hryvnia, the money there in Ukraine. And they wanted to exchange that for Polish zloty or dollars, but first couple of months, money was not exchangeable. Can you imagine you go somewhere with your dollars in the pocket and they're not exchangeable? And they did. Ukrainians, they did, and say, what to do? Well, we pray. We said, what to do? Come over, bring this money. Well, we exchange for them. We give them the dollars. For their dignity, you know, it's important for people to just to go to the... They've been helped, but even to go into the shop, you know, and buy something themselves, that is important. And we were taking these hryvnias, and we were sending with these buses back to Ukraine, with the food trucks back to Ukraine, because hryvnias in Ukraine were still money, good money. So, that's how we were kind of the helping them to do so. So, you know, this, I know our time is flying, you know, feel free to ask any questions, you know, if you have some questions to that, because I can keep talking, you know, keep talking and talking about this stories what's going on there. But, you know, the back to this daily life, you know, in a hotel. People are asking, how long can we stay in this hotel? We said, usually we kind of sign a contract. It's not business contract, but it's for them to know that they're embraced by us, they're welcomed by us. But, you know, if they're good with children, 1 month, and then if they find the job, or we help them to find the place somewhere, we would love to do it. You know, I told you about the Oleg who's back to Kherson. But another gentleman speaking very good English. He is a translator, you know, professional translator, Sergei, with his wife. Knew Sergei from before the war because of the other conferences. And Sergei, when they came to Poland, you know, a couple months ago, he was offered a job by the American soldiers, the American army. he came to me and said, "Milo, I don't know what to do. I've been approached by somebody to go to this military base in Poland to translate from English to Ukrainian and train the Ukrainians to operate Patriots or Abrams or some of your sophisticated weapons." I said, "Oh, yes, it's Sergei. Just go, you know, because they need you there." So Sergei got the contract for a year to be a translator in helping Ukrainians to learn, you know, some of the skills, the military skills. The other families there in the picture, some of them left for America, some of them are still there, and go to work. So, you know, if they have a kids in the school age, moms can go to work, and is enough work in our country for the Ukrainians if they like to, if you can and like to do so. And the city where we are located, with the where the hotel is located, is just at 15 miles from the campsite, with 70,000 people in the city, there is around 4,000 or 5,000 Ukrainians. So our hotel, you know, 50, 60 is not many, but we're so glad we can help many, one at a time, right? You know, so this is a huge thing for us to do it. But you know, we just decided, let's do something for the rest of those who are in our city. And we said, okay, we do for you, we call it Ukrainian Prams Club on Saturday between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock. Place an announcement in the local social media. From that few months already, we started before the Christmas last year. Every Saturday between 10 and 1 o'clock, we have fun with kids. 70, 80 kids are coming. Program for them, food for them, and Bible lesson for them. I see your hands, guys.
Yeah, like what are like some practical steps that, you know, if you had a room full of primarily medical professionals, or even some who aren't, but like what are some practical steps that...
Like for you guys, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like for you, you know, you said you were coming, what you could do, right, to end up to help Ukrainians? Yes, you know, because we are in the EU, so the restriction and limitation of the official help is like in any other European countries. So in other words, you have your diploma approved in this country where you go in order to do the service. But you're talking about the medical service, you know, whatever, you know, the general practitioners or heart doctors or whatever in this area. But if you're thinking about the counseling, if you could help on the area of the being with the people, and even to do it pro bono, you know, like with us at Pro M, we would love to have you there and sit down with the people and to check the health of the people. You could do just about everything what you do officially, but not to write the prescription, not to be paid, and not to be recognized as a medical guys in the country. And we could go to the refugees places, because there are still a lot in Poland. You know, like the big warehouses that were turned into the refugees place. Next in Warsaw, there is a lot of, you know, when there is 500, 700 in one room, just being there. So we could go there. But if you're talking about the official way to go from here to there to do your practice, it's very limited or time-consuming to get the papers like that. But if you're willing to come anyway for 2 weeks or shorter mission trip or for longer, we would more than love to have you to come to us, and it will be a huge help. We provide the interpretation on the good level, way better than my English. We have some well-speaking, you know, the counselors. Actually, we provide the counseling in the city as well, not only for Ukrainians, but for the Polish people. We have a counseling center, counseling center, so certified counselors, and you could help for them. Yes?
Just thank you so much for sharing all of the stories. I think it's really inspiring just hearing how your how you saw the needs that were in front of you and kind of met them as they came. It's like a lot of what I'm hearing is you see a need and you're trying to find ways to meet it. One question I had is, as you're doing those things, obviously your staff are encountering a lot of really hard things through the people who they're seeing and they're serving. And so I'm curious what words of wisdom or what things you have noticed or things that would help to make that sustainable for them, because they're obviously the people who you're serving are hurting and have experienced trauma. But I guess sort of what things have you done or to support your staff so that they could support them, I guess.
That's a great question, because something what has started in February 24 last year is extra work for us, and the staff is 24/7 with the people who needs the help. And because of that, you know, to take care, to really care for our staff, we decided for this year, you may laugh what I would say, but we decided to do something what we call slowbatical, not a sabbatical. I feel like you know the familiar, you're familiar with this term when you know your leaders go for 5 weeks, 6 weeks or something like that. But we say, I told my staff, guys, we push forward some of the big events like we're doing, you know, Journey to Bethlehem, 10,000 people coming to our property for this Christmas play. The same for the Easter, you know, Road to Jerusalem, Night to Shine. So we said, okay, we'll continue with school, with church, and camp will be operating in the sense of camping and availability for other groups, but not us. We will not do it because the staff is need the help. So for now, right now, we are here with my wife, but there is seven other couples in America being somewhere for 2 weeks, some of them for 5 weeks, just to rest and to them. And we provide the same time the counseling for them. Spending the time and time away from these daily routines and being here just to recuperate. Am I answering your? Okay, thank you.
I echo. Thank you for being here and sharing this. Several questions. Are you seeing orphans come, and what provisions are made for them? Also, how is the church doing in Ukraine? Do you get any feedback there? Mm-hmm. And then lastly, are countries still open to having the Ukrainians, you know, immigrate to there? Are you seeing more resistance or difficulty with some of this, you know, movement?
Your country is doing program called U for U, which is USA for Ukraine. When you can get a one-way visa, immigrant visa to Ukrainians, and they're still in place, but they have to find the sponsors, they have to find the place where to go, and we're helping in that. That's the second, the third question. The second question, the churches. Churches are vibrant still in Ukraine. There's more people coming to the existing churches than before, because, you know, if you're in the troubles, where you go? To God, to the church, to the people, and we're connected with these people. And I know it from the first-hand experience, because talking about the orphans and the kids from Ukraine, our camps, when I told you we relocated refugees from the camp to the hotel, it was 2 weeks before our camp season starts. So I was thinking we have 2 weeks to paint, to rebuild something what was used for the 3 months. Well, the next day when they were leaving, I got a phone call from Chernovtsi, from the city of Chernovtsi. They say, hey, we have the 2 bus loaded kids from orphanage. Can you take them for 1 week? I said, forget the painting, cleaning, etc. Drive our way. And they came to us to be with us for another week, and we take the kids from the orphanage from there. We take kids, Ukrainian kids from Poland, from the families organizing 3 weeks in June for Ukrainian kids. So if you know somebody there, you know, in Lviv, Chernovtsi, Zhytomyr, whatever, who would like to come and have some time away from missiles or whatever we call it. So we are there to serve them as well. Mm-hmm. Yes?
What's your capacity? And then following up to that question, how do you prioritize based on needs? Because I know that's probably a constant struggle.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Sorry, like forgive my English.
How many people can you accommodate?
Uh-huh.
And then how do you decide what accommodations to make when? How do you prioritize who to help?
Exactly.
That's good.
I'm sorry.
A lot.
So when we just got the capacity of our camp, we said, you may come to our way, but we will provide mattress for you, not the room like others are having. If you like to come, come over. If not, we'll help you to find another place in Poland to go for the time being, you know, when you need. So we don't have like a system in place to say your age, what you're suffering with, or anything like that, you know, because from the very beginning, some people came even without a passport. And they were applying in Poland for the passports. And of course, we are Czech, and we registered them, and we have to report them to the police daily. There was a Polish CIA, kind of, whatever it is in Poland. They came to us, and they said, okay, I will be a point person for you. If you see somebody who is suspicious or whatever to you, just report. They give me his phone number, and we just submitted the list every... if something was changing, somebody was coming and going, next day we were submitting this list to the hotel. We don't make again, you know, we don't make any like if we have a room, we say, come tomorrow. If somebody is saying, can we come in the next month, call us in the 2 weeks, because couple families may leave, and at that time we could have the room and you may come. You know, there sometimes, like mom, recently, you know, mom came with his son who is 17 years, and you know, 3 days before the birthday, before the 18th birthday, because should he have a birthday 18, he would not be allowed to cross the border. So we said, come over, yeah, we can have you. And sometimes it's like last moment, last minute call, and if we have a room, we take them. If we don't, we take them, but if we're telling them that we're not the conditions like before. Guys, thank you very much. If you have more questions, I know our time is just about over. I appreciate your kind attention. Means a lot to us. And my wife is here. We have some materials. If you'd like to be connected, we would love to send you our As It Happened information. Or if you have the desire to come for a few weeks, for a longer period of time, we are there to serve you as you are serving Ukrainians with prayer. God bless you and thank you very much.